You're listening to Future Thinking from Stylus, the show where our analysts, alongside industry thought leaders, unpack the big trends you need to know about. Find out more about what the future holds for your business at stylus.com.
Hello, and welcome to Future Thinking from Stylus. I'm your host, Leila Petra. In today's episode, I spoke to Stylus's senior trends editor for retail and brand comms, Rebecca Hobbs, to unpack the cutting-edge sports marketing strategies emerging from the highly anticipated Paris 2024 Olympics. We explore how brands are creatively tackling themes like parenthood, resilience, subcultures, and more, with Rebecca highlighting a few standout examples.
So this year's Olympics, I think, is particularly exciting with the introduction of quite an array of new sports, from breakdancing to surfing and even skateboarding. What's interesting, I think, with each of these sports is that they both quite strong communities and quite a dedicated, loyal audience / fan base, which must present quite a prime opportunity for brands to engage. How can brands then leverage these new sports being included in the Olympics? And have you seen any successful examples so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you say, these sports do have really passionate fandoms and ready-made communities that brands can hook into. But they've also just got so much pop cultural clout. And I think those two things together present a really wonderful brand opportunity that actually Samsung kind of seized with both hands. It produced a series of three 10-minute mini documentaries on surfing, which is obviously not taking place in Paris. It's taking place in Tahiti. And that's where that incredible photo of the Brazilian world champion Gabriel Medina was taken recently. And also breaking and skateboarding, which was introduced at the Tokyo Olympics, but is still relatively new. Surfing and breaking, obviously, new to the Paris Olympics. And these documentaries have proven incredibly popular. They've each got 5 million views on YouTube in their first month, which for a kind of a branded doc is really huge. And I think why they're so successful is that kind of that pop cultural clout, but also that focus on the community spirit and the sociocultural kind of significance of each discipline. They've got great interviews with sporting figureheads, and they really show how to dig in journalistically to a community and kind of spotlight what makes it tick.
Another area in the sports world that we've really witnessed this kind of remarkable surge in interest is in women's sports, which I know we've covered the women's sports boom in our reports, and even stating that I think the global revenue from elite women's sports expected to exceed $1 billion this year. Despite this kind of growth in popularity, however, I think there's still these noticeable kind of obstacles hindering women participation in sports within the wider world. I think one topic that comes up a lot is motherhood and parenting. Even though we've seen a lot of strong mothers and fathers competing in the Olympics this year, how are brands addressing these wider challenges faced by parents in accessing sports? And what strategies are they employing to drive that change in narrative?
We've seen some really interesting strategies around this. And I think you're right. There is, despite there being some really notable athletes who are also very active parents, there is, I think, still that tension with you're either an elite athlete dedicated to your sport or you're an active parent. And I think that's a stereotype that still is knocking around. And I think the main activation I'd pick up here is actually P&G. So they're taking a bit of a different tack for the Paris Olympics. There's no kind of overarching, super anthemic advert, but instead it's individual brands are doing on-the-ground Olympic Village activations. So we've got Pampers, which I know listeners may have seen, providing the first ever Olympic Village nursery. It's pretty shocking, actually, that this is a first. And it really keys into that idea that you're an elite sports person or you're an active parent. At Tokyo, for instance, actually, parent athletes had access to a windowless room. Looks really grim. No comfortable chairs. And that was outside the Olympic Village. And so because of COVID restrictions, a lot of athletes were unable to actually be with their children. So I think Pampers has done something really important here. If you look at the picture of its nursery and the Tokyo facilities, they're radically different. And obviously that Pampers activation is for Olympians, but it's trickle-down effect. And I think how we make space for parents in sports is a really interesting area. But obviously one we've charted previously, I think probably most recently in our brand's Breaking Barriers with Sports report from this spring. But yeah, I think that for me was a really great activation, a really important one.
So another group of athletes making their mark against all odds is the Refugee Olympics team participating this year, all of whom have some really incredible stories. Are any brands actively addressing inclusivity within the Olympics and promoting this powerful message of resilience in their engagement as showcased by the refugee team?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously resilience is this recurring theme in sports marketing, but this takes it to a whole other level, obviously. And I think there are a couple of campaigns I'd call out on this. First of all, the Nike campaign featuring the refugee team, primarily boxer Cindy Ngumba. And this really puts quite an exciting new spin on that kind of classic idea. It shows various team members practicing their disciplines, but it's interspersed with a shot of Ngamba as a child before she was forced to leave Cameroon, aged 11, and images of this vast refugee camp. And it both kind of presents sports as a kind of unifying, border-transcending force. But I think most powerfully for me, it also pushes back on anti-refugee, anti-migrant sentiment. It's quite a politically attuned ad, obviously, and it's definitely one that people should check out. Notably, another one I would pick up on is the IOC's own campaign for the refugee team, which really presents the athletes as one team for the 100 million displaced people across the world, which is just a staggering number. And it really, it presents the kind of the idea of a victory for the refugee team almost being a kind of victory for humanity. An incredible kind of unifying moment. But yeah, that's another one definitely that I think is pretty notable.
Just along those lines of inclusivity and seeing people from all walks of life kind of being involved in the Olympics, there's also the messaging surrounding body positivity and kind of defining what an athlete looks like and seeing all sorts of body shapes and sizes participating in the Olympics. Do you see brands tapping into that message surrounding encouragement of people of all shapes and sizes to be excited and actively participate in kind of the sports camaraderie of the event?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my personal favorite Olympic campaign is actually from Speedo. And again, I'd really encourage listeners to check it out if they've not come across it already. It's got a really great soundtrack actually from this Australian band called The Beats. And it really forges ahead with the idea of sonic branding, which is something we're charting at Stylus at the moment. We've seen the kind of the likes of Balenciaga do it previously. And this is a really nice new spin on it. But this campaign is really the antithesis of a lot of elite sports advertising. It is not about being the best. It's not about sacrifice. It's about living life to the full, no matter your fitness level or your body type. And the tagline, which I repeated a lot, it's repeated a lot in that soundtrack I just mentioned, is "Go full speedo." It depicts Australian actor Dacre Montgomery, who's Billy from Stranger Things. He's obviously a lifeguard as well as being possessed by the Mind Flayer, leading a crowd from the inner city through the suburbs to the beach. And you've got like kind of office workers and lawn mowing suburbanites of all body types stripping down to their speedos. It's really joyous and it's absolutely all about the kind of, it's got a real sense of camaraderie. It's great.
I guess, again, along the same kind of lines, I think a type of messaging that brands can get either right or wrong is when handling kind of disability representation. How are they navigating that for the Paralympics this year? In what ways can they deliver impactful messaging while avoiding those potential pitfalls or criticisms that I think we've seen maybe in the past few Olympics?
I think we've seen a really interesting effort from Channel 4 here. British broadcaster, obviously, it had the rights to broadcast the Paralympics in the UK since London hosted the Games in 2012. Those were the most successful Paralympics up until that point anyway, by a big margin. And Channel 4 was a really big part of making that happen. Its campaign called Superhumans then ran for the next decade, but it began to face criticism from disability rights campaigners who I think felt it was a bit condescending and perhaps sent the message that disabled people had to be depicted as ultra heroic. And that's a really interesting area, actually, that we dug into a bit deeper in last year's macro report, Disability Futures. Our brand engagement report looked at how advertising is moving beyond just increased visibility, but it also tackles the idea of inspiration porn, basically looking at how disabled people have been portrayed as inspirational solely on the basis of their disability. And I think Channel 4's campaign really confronts its previous narrative implicitly, obviously. It was created in partnership with the British disability comms consultancy Purple Goat, and it just zeroes in on the forces that kind of govern movement. You've got gravity, friction, time, and it's about those forces not caring whether a participant is disabled or not. So you see Paralympians slammed to the floor or see the skin come off their bodies as they skid across the ground. So it's pretty brutal, but it's excellent. And it also, again, implicitly confronts viewers' own bias by depicting kind of TV viewers and even kind of Paralympic spectators in the stands saying things like, oh, she's doing so well considering, oh, so brave, or whatever, that kind of condescending narrative, which I think can creep in. So yeah, no, it's an excellent ad.
More from Rebecca in a moment, but just a quick pause to say that for our members, you can access our full-length Olympics and Paralympics 2024 10 Big Ideas for Sports Marketing report on the site and find weekly new content on our TikTok channel at We Are Stylists. And if you're not already a member and would like to find out how access to Stylists could benefit your business, email innovation@stylist.com or visit www.stylist.com/membership. Now back to my interview with Rebecca.
What I find really fascinating, I think, with this year's Olympics and also I think previously in the Tokyo Olympics, is with the rise of social media and TikTok and all of those things, there's been this kind of significant and compelling increase in athletes' presence and influence on social media, particularly with fans engaging in more behind the scenes content. My TikTok's been flooded with what Olympians are eating in the food hall and how these synchronized swimmers are keeping their makeup and hair all together underwater and those kind of things. We've seen that this trend is especially noticeable in the beauty sector with the emergence of sports-ready beauty products, which we've also covered in our reports. With this Olympics kind of drawing more attention to athletes' routines and, like I said, behind-the-scenes content, how are beauty brands leveraging this influence to enhance their own market presence?
Yeah, like you say, that it's a really nice background to this because I feel like sports and beauty have often been set up as being almost diametrically opposed. But like you say, that's something we've covered recently in retail and brand comms in our recent beauty report, which is really fascinating to see. And like you say, again, we've seen a kind of a real proliferation of behind the scenes content, both at Tokyo and now Paris, even more so. One brand tapping into that really well is NYX, the American cosmetics brand. So it partnered with American gymnast Shalisi Jones for an Olympics Get Ready With Me. She actually then heartbreakingly had to pull out because of injury and she was really highly tipped. But they managed to pivot to a kind of training day Get Ready With Me video campaign instead. And again, Glossier reprised its partnership with the WNBA for this as well. It's also activating on social media. And like that behind the scenes aspect as well. I mentioned Pampers activation earlier. P&G's hair care brands, all part of an athlete salon in the Olympics Village. And Olympians have obviously been sharing behind the scenes videos from that on social platforms as well.
Just to wrap up then, what would you say are some of the kind of final key takeaways for our listeners from today's conversation? What should brands be prioritizing in integrating events like the Olympics into their marketing strategies?
I think I just call attention to some of the kind of the really big themes that we've discussed and the campaigns that probably embody them best. I'm thinking of the women's sports boom, which is just such a huge moment currently that obviously all of those kind of P&G activations pick up on. I think Nike's politically attuned approach with the kind of the geopolitical landscape becoming ever more volatile, I think that's a really important one. Channel 4's clever implicit reflection of its own advertising is a really great one to check out. And obviously my personal favorite, Go Full Speedo. The Olympics is all about elite sports, but all sporting events are obviously an ideal time to both champion grassroots sports, but also just physical activity and really heroing that kind of the everyman alongside the elite.
That's it for this edition of Future Thinking. I hope you enjoyed it and I'd love to hear your feedback. On X, we're at stylist_live, and on Instagram and TikTok, you can find us at We Are Stylists. See you next time.
You've been listening to Future Thinking from Stylists, the show where our analysts, alongside industry thought leaders, unpack the big trends that you need to know about. Find out more about what the future holds for your business at stylist.com. And if you like what you heard today, make sure you subscribe to Future Thinking in iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts to hear new episodes as soon as they're available.